when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Hello, everyone. This is Shelby Gallagher with episode 12 of the Prepping 2.0 show. Welcome, everyone. This is going to be a fun and exciting and conversational show today. We are focused on book week this
week.
Book
week.
It's like book week.
It's like shark week without the sharks.
Well, and it won't cause you to be terrified of waters. You know, waterways and things like that, because you're going to get eaten by something with big teeth. So that's a good thing. I know. Feel the comfort. So today, what's going to happen is Glenn is going to interview me, Shelby Gallagher, author of the A Great State series. And what's really cool is book two of the three-book series was just finally, thank you for all you patient fans out there, finally just released on Audible. So all of you folks who love to listen to your books on Audible, you can find it there. So that's great. But we also realized as we have developed this show and we've developed some really awesome listeners out there, there's a lot of you that don't know our books. And so we wanted to kind of have this focus on book week and talk about our books, characters that we have that have people have grown to love or hate, and it's going to be kind of fun. I think it's going to be almost like a book club sort of thing.
Yeah, but without the nerds.
Yeah, exactly. What kind of cool people. So places you can connect with us, though. We always like to tell you that. First and foremost, you can listen to this show and previous ones at prepping2-0.com. This is episode 12. You can go back and listen to all the previous episodes. Not easy to reach us there. We don't have our contact information there. To reach us, you can reach us at our author pages. Glenn's author pages, 299days.com. I will be interviewing you later this week. We have three episodes this week, too.
I know. It's
so that,
awesome.
So what we tried to do is all these great and fun and exciting things that we could do this week. I'll tell you more about that here in a moment, though. 299days.com, you can reach, and you can reach out to Glenn there. You can reach out to me at my website, agreatstate.com.
Because those are the names of the books, by the
exactly.
way. Exactly. I'm constantly remembering, because you're reminding me, that not everyone has read the books. So, yes,
yep.
Shelby wrote A Great State, three-book series. I wrote 299 Days, 10-book series. Yeah, keep
and
going.
And we were preppers and authors before we were show hosts.
Show hosts, exactly.
Which is really cool.
Curious, you use the word show and not podcast. Why might that be?
Thank you for that great segue, Glenn.
Segue.
Is that we developed this show primarily in the beginning, 11 episodes ago, as a podcast. And what's happened since then is we have been picked up by radio stations.
Sounds like plural when you say station.
Stations.
And with a Z on the
end. With a Z, because that's what makes it reels. But we'll talk about that more later. But right now, if you want to connect with us on a radio station, that would be KYAH out of Utah, Utah's Talk Authority. And we'll be telling you more about some of the upcoming ones here soon.
I think that was the terrestrial radio teaser, the terrestrial teaser.
It is, so you'll have to tune in.
Hmm.
Yes, because we want to announce that later. So for those of you who are listening to us on radio, welcome. Thank you for tuning in. Please continue to do so. And we have to now change our vernacular to say show. We are no longer a podcast anymore. We are a legitimate show, which is awesome. So thank you to all of you out there who made it happen, which brings me to my next point. Thank you to Contra Radio.
Yes.
John Jeffers over at the Contra Radio, and he also has his own show called The Jeffers Brief. That's an awesome show.
Which I highly recommend. I listen to it every week. Really good content on there, and it's stuff you're not going to hear elsewhere, and I've become an addict. So
yeah.
Highly recommend the John Jeffers Jeffers Brief on Contra Radio.
He really kicked the door in for us to get into terrestrial radio. So we owe him a debt of gratitude, and he's a good friend. He's become a good friend over the last several months. So Ooh, and there's going to be an after show today in particular. Okay, let's get down to the nitty-gritty here. We are going to, Glenn is going to interview me regarding characters and plots and everything about the Great State series. Chapter 3 is the kicker. We'll talk about that here a little bit more, but we will delve more into Chapter 3 because it's a very sensitive topic. It's sensitive to others. It's not to me anymore. You'll find out why when we get there, but please tune in to those of you who are on Patreon to the after show, which will be focused on Chapter 3. So, it's your turn. I need to quit talking because Glenn is going to do the next segment on our show, which we try to do every week. Go, Glenn.
Yes, this is the top 100 things that disappear in a crisis. And there are a bunch of these lists that are on the internet that are all of the same 100 things. It's on our website, prepping2-0.com. This is a great weekly reminder for listeners of the things that disappear quickly. That is, things you should probably have. If not, that you will use, you should have them because other people will need them, and that's when bartering comes in. So we're on number 5, and that's lamp oil, wicks, and lamps. This is something we always forget about because the lights just come on. We recently had a couple hours of power outage here in rural Western Washington where we are bunkered down. And, you know, here I am. I'm a grown-up. I'm a prepper. Shelby's a grown-up. She's, you know, a prepper. What do? We flip the switch on the light when we walk in the room, right? We just have forgotten about it. What came in really, really handy? First of all, candles. You have a lot of candles, which are awesome. It was a nice ambiance, too.
It was like, and it smells really good.
It smells really good, exactly. That's right, preppers. When the world ends, don't forget your smells. You got to have good smells. And just the room lights, lamps are great. They're relatively inexpensive. By the way, you can get a little Coleman lantern that produces both light and heat and runs on the little 1-pound canisters that you can get on sale for $1 or $2, the canisters. Mm-hmm. Great thing to have. So anyway, don't forget the lamp oil, wicks, lamps, and I'll add lanterns. I mean, yeah. Coleman lanterns. There's some great D-cell lanterns now. Surefire makes some. The Camp series, they're really, really good and inexpensive. So you don't have to get the old-timey Little House on the Prairie lamps and the oil that catches on fire, but you can.
And I will say this last power outage that we had this last week, we were not in the same place. You were actually coming home. I was home. And here's the thing. You think it's going to go off when you're just sitting there, you know, relaxed and finding your center and your whatever. No.
Which never happens with us because we work all the time.
I was in the middle of something and I'm like, okay, power's out. I can't see anything. It is pitch black.
Where we live is extremely
and
remote.
Very dark. We don't have street lights. We don't have external lights from some. And even then, that's not, those will go out too. I need to know where the lighter is and I need to know where the candle is. And I had to feel my way through the house. I knew where the lighter was and I knew where the candles were. Kind of put that into place as well. So, and that's just for power outages. You'll need, so just to throw that out there. I was kind of surprised that this isn't convenient. I got to go looking for these things in the dark, literally. So there you go. All right. So this is now, I'm going to hand this over to you, Glenn.
Well, yes, thank you. Now I get to interview Shelby. By the way, I've been on about 150 podcasts. Many of them center on interviews about the books. And I've learned, I hope, what a good interviewer says and the questions that are asked to elicit great information from an author. So I hope I can hold myself up to that. So now the hunter is the hunted.
All right, I'm ready.
Okay, here we go. First of all, why don't you retell the story about the hammer?
The hammer, and if you have not read our books, you can read my book, specifically book one of A Great State, The Divide. You wrote the foreword, and so that if you want to hear Glenn's side, you can read that. But what it was is I had written about, I'm going to say what would be equivalent to about the 8 or 10 chapters now of A Great State. And I'm wanting to, what's going on in my mind is I am wanting to, how would a guy, a male, respond in this situation? And what I'm writing through is some of the self-defense chapters of A Great State, The Divide. And chapter three is in my rearview mirror. I'm done with chapter three. Chapter three is based on what really happened to me years and years ago. And when I wrote it, cried my way through it, got it written down on paper, and I kept going. So I'm asking, I'm wanting to know guy questions. So I send this to you. I send you, this is what I have. And I remember sitting at my computer going, okay, this is kind of personal.
Kinda. Try it. It's very personal. By the way, we're not married at this time.
Nope.
We don't even know each other at this time.
We're acquaintances, yeah.
Yeah, I was this essentially a stranger.
Yeah, and so to hand somebody not just your story, but something that you've put down on paper and you want it to be good, you don't want to hand, I don't want to hand this guy who is an author, who is a well-known author at the time, crap. I don't want to send him garbage, you know? So I say, okay, I'm going to send this to you, be honest here with me. And I'm sitting at my computer with the send button going, should I send it, should I not? And I'm having about 2 or 3 minutes of, and then I send it. And then there's the, oh, okay, it's out there in the universe for this person that I don't know very well to read. So there, that was it from my end. And then your response was the surprise to me.
Yes, you foolishly gave me your phone number.
Yeah, I did.
Which ended up resulting in a marriage. but no, I had your phone number, mm-hmm. and I read chapter three. And I think we can quit, you know, beating around the bush with chapter three. Chapter three is about your rape.
Yeah, it's a sexual assault that happened to me, and it
long time ago. Things are way better.
Things are way better, and not to excuse it, my life changed in that day, but it is kind of it's the launching point for the series for how, and what I wanted to speak of when I wrote that is, I was very, very, very broken. After that, I really felt like all I had was, I didn't even have myself anymore. I was very broken. And how do you come from such a broken place to self-sufficiency, confidence, awareness, healing, all of those things? How do you come from nothing and become something? And out of the, you know, ashes rises the phoenix kind of story is what I wanted to tell.
Absolutely. And you do. So I read this chapter, and the way you described what happened, first of all, tasteful, to the extent that's possible.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's not, I can't even come up with a word. Anyway, it's tastefully done. And I remember texting you after I read that chapter. I said, I'm walking around my house now looking for a hammer. And your reaction was something like,
oh,
okay. And I thought, I looked at that and I realized, she's going to think I'm a complete weirdo, right? For just why about a hammer? And I said, yeah, I'm trying to find the hammer I want to use to cave that guy's face in. And I just got a goosebump when I said that, because it is so powerful, and that man is such a piece of garbage. So it elicited that kind of response. And then I thought to myself, oh my, if this can elicit this kind of response, this is, you know, a story that needs to get out. And then I said, we got to get this thing published. This is an amazing story. If you can bring out this kind of reaction in somebody, I'm a little bit jaded. I'm not, you know, emotionally fragile. And I had that reaction. Think about this, folks. Which hammer am I going to use to pound someone's face in and kill them? Think about how violent and hopefully unusual that sort of thought is. And so that and then it took off from there, as far as, you know, this is a book I encourage you'd never written before, which I think, by the way, if I may, I know I'm interviewing you, but I have to say this on the topic of never having written fiction before, I think it is a huge strength for you and for me, but we'll focus on you, because there's no cookie cutter, there's no mm-hmm. template. This doesn't read like a novel. I don't even read books, to be honest, so I don't even know what a novel is supposed to be like, but I know what real is, and this is very, very real. So now, why did you write the books? And a follow-up question was, was that, you know, a very conscious decision? Did you say, why, a year from now, I'm going to be an author, and I'm going to have a radio show? I mean, was this planned?
No, goodness, no. I will say this. I've never been a published author before, but I've always liked to write. I think it's a very creative way to get thoughts out there, thoughts and ideas. And I've had a personal blog before, which is obviously not fiction, but it's, you know, writing is not something that I hate to do. Like my kids, ask my kids, they hate to write. But so going back, what made me write this was at the time was the 2016 elections, the lead up to it. And in 2016, where I lived in Oregon, fairly contentious, but we all knew Oregon was going to go blue. Nobody in Oregon, I was weird for wanting to vote conservative. So that was going on. And as the election got closer, it got really contentious, especially in Portland. And I'm feeling the tensions come up. And at the time, my family had a cabin in Colorado that had always been, for years and years, my bug out location. If I need to leave Oregon, whether it's a natural disaster, whether it's political disaster, whatever, that is where I can go for safety. That same fall, that cabin was sold. So I'm sitting here in Portland watching riots start to bubble up. Going, the one time I need that bug out location, I don't have it. And it kind of panicked me a little bit. And it's what got me started. What would happen? What could that be like? Let's think about what that could be like to have to bug out of here. That would be strange, especially in those times when there was the rumblings of Antifa, rumblings of police endorsed riots in Portland that I talk about so much.
Absolutely. I love the fact that this was accidental. The books have done, your books have done very, very well. Book two of the audiobooks just came out, and that's going to bring even more folks into this series. Mm-hmm. And so that has been a pleasant surprise to everybody, because I knew it was really good. I think I knew that the books were better than you thought they were, but that's tradition. I mean, people are modest and humble, good people like you are. And so that's not surprising, but it's been very, very popular.
Well, and I think when I wrote these books, because right now fans who have read, especially book one and actually book two, they're reading it now. And I wrote these books about 2 years ago, these two, and people are like,
you predicted a lot of stuff.
What I was writing, all I was doing is taking the nuggets that were on the ground at the time and fictionalizing it and kind of throwing my imagination into it. They became true. That's what's so eerie.
Here's a great example of this, and we're obviously not going to describe the entire books, but here's a very quick and understandable example of what you're talking about. In the books, you talk about Washington, Oregon, and California basically breaking off from the United States, and you came up with this term that I had never heard before called sanctuary states. You know, they're sanctuary cities, and you came up with sanctuary states. And I remember distinctly, because I can tell who can predict stuff, and you can predict stuff. Mm-hmm. And I remember Googling the term sanctuary state back in probably November of 2016. Nothing came up. And I tucked that away in my brain. I remember then, it was probably April of 2017.
It was April.
April of 2017. You send me this text, you say, oh my goodness, look at this. Oregon's governor has declared Oregon a sanctuary state. I coined that phrase. And it wasn't like an arrogant thing. Hey, I coined this phrase. It was like, oh my goodness.
It came true. It was my shock of, oh my gosh, it came true.
Exactly. And then I'm getting chills again. This happens a lot. This happens a lot. Another term you came up with is domestic immigration. And I think we're going to be hearing a lot about that, where people from the sanctuary states try to go to the great states, mm-hmm. which are the good states. And no one from the great states tries to go to the sanctuary states, because they're all messed up and destroyed. Anything to add about the genesis of the books?
Yeah, that was really it, those two things. The other thing I would add, now that I think about it, is at the time, too, I didn't come about to the prepping world, and I talk about this a lot, the way many of us did. You came to it in 2008, 2009, after the Obama administration was really starting to put in some really not freedom-loving sorts of policies. And I was not pleased with our president making that decision at the time, but it didn't force me to prep. What forced me to prep was couponing and stockpiling, using couponing to save some money. So
tell that story, because we have about four more minutes in this segment. But this is amazing, because this I had never heard of this before. You came to prepping not from the traditional route. You came at it as a single mom saving some money who needed to protect herself, and look at how it took off. Please tell the story.
Well, what it is if you look back at about 2008, 2009, 2010, one of the very popular shows at the time was called Extreme Couponing, and it was these stories of these women or men who could walk into a grocery store and get like $1,000 worth of groceries for a couple of dollars, and it was inspiring. And so that started kind of a couponing movement, and you could, especially in your local areas, because stores change regionally, you could find out how to do that in your area. And I took classes on how to do that. And I'm going to tell you right now, I never was that awesome. I could not go do the $1,000 for $2. It's called extreme couponing for a reason. But one of the tenets of couponing is when something's super duper on sale, clearance priced, couple that with a bunch of coupons, getting your hand on a bunch of coupons and stockpiling them, especially non-perishables, things like toilet paper, toothpaste, shampoo, canned goods, that sort of thing. That lends itself really well into prepping. That's prepping right there, is stockpiling things, and especially with couponing at a super discounted price, why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah, that's fascinating. And so you also come to prepping from the self-defense aspect. Tell us a little about that.
Well, it came down to things are getting more violent. I need to start protecting myself. And I really felt it when it came to when I'm out in public with what was then my small children, and what a target you become in some ways. And I know I only have a couple of minutes here, but the one story that really caught my eye, and I talked about this in a previous podcast, was this woman at the Oregon Zoo in the parking lot with her very small children. Man approaches her with a gun, attempting to rape her in a parking lot. I mean, he had to be high, but with a knife. And if you've studied self-defense, knives are in a lot of ways scarier than guns. And she managed to scream and cry and draw attention in a very public parking lot. But I'm like, holy crow, I don't know. I want to bring a gun to a knife fight. And so I started just very slowly taking classes, getting my CHL in Oregon, it's called a concealed handgun license, finding good deals on firearms, finding good deals on ammo.
And you met Ash. We're going to talk about her. She's a character. She's a female self-defense instructor, gun instructor. She is going to be interviewed, yay!
During Book Week.
During Book Week on episode 14. And you can hear more about her, because she's an extremely fascinating character. And by the way, I got to meet her for the first time in real life. She's even more interesting in real life, because she's kind of this goth, tattooed, you know, black hair kind of person, and you would never think that she's like at the highest levels of firearms instruction you can be at. And she was very, very influential in your life. And we'll find out more about that in the segment with her, which is coming up in episode 14. Well, we are at the end of our first segment. This was great. We're just warming up, folks. We will see you on the other side.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
Hello, folks. Shelby Gallagher here, wanting to let you know about a great event coming up, the Puget Sound Preparedness Expo. It's on Saturday, March 30th at the Baymont Inn and Suites in Bremerton, Washington.
It's going to be great. This is Glenn Tate here. We're going to have John Jacob Schmidt speaking, Representative Matt Shea, simulcast on 1400 AM KITZ Radio. Look for us on Facebook, Puget Sound Preparedness Expo 2019. Come on out and see us.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
The Operator G1 is a full-featured, rugged comm solution designed for the Midland MXT 100 and 105. Designed and manufactured in the USA, the Operator is an all-in-one support platform for two-way wireless communication for civilians. Using the GMRS bands, there is no ham license required and no test needed for operation. Ideal for preppers, hunters, homesteaders, ranchers, and people just like you. Waterproof when closed, this rugged system houses the Midland radio, microphone, and antenna, providing an always-ready, always-charged grab-and-go solution for emergencies or events, as well as an ideal solution for a base station or vehicle use. Powered by a 60 Ah internal battery, the Operator recharges quickly and easily using the supplied AC charger, the internal solar controller, or directly from a vehicle. If you recognize the value of wireless communication with or without grid power, the Operator G1 is an award-winning solution that allows simple, one-button communication when it counts. Our two-year warranty, quality materials, and first-class assembly technicians deliver a high-value solution when you need to be sure you can get your comms up. To learn more, go online to portableuniversalpower.com.
Prepper Press is a small, independent publisher of survival nonfiction and post-apocalyptic fiction. At PrepperPress.com, you'll find a variety of books to guide you on your journey to prepare for a compromise to the electrical grid, natural disasters, economic collapse, political strife, or similar scenarios that could disrupt life as we know it. You'll also discover fictional yet believable stories about what happens to society when everything falls apart. To learn more, visit Prepper Press online at PrepperPress.com.
Do you need a custom Kydex holster or magazine holder? Glenn Tate's favorite custom holster and mag holder maker is Northwest Retention Systems. You can select your holster or mag holder color, including the I Miss America logo, and Northwest Retention Systems will custom make yours. While you're at it, look into the Scout Chest Rig Holster. Glenn loves his for vehicle operations and for fishing. Made by a young craftsman supporting a growing family of young patriots, Northwest Retention Systems products are 100% American-made with no foreign parts. Find out more online at northwestretentionsystems.com.
Hi, this is Glenn Tate. I wanted to let you know about the ammo supply place that I go to. There's no endorsements. Nobody's paying me anything. They're just good guys. Ammo Supply Warehouse. Ammo Supply Warehouse. Butch out there will take care of you. You know, prepping 1.0 is getting ammunition by the box. Prepping 2.0 is getting a case. You need to have at least a case of ammo for every gun.
Shelby Gallagher here. For all the ladies out there, you can never have enough ammo.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
And we are back with the second segment of episode 12. This is Glenn Tate, that's me, interviewing Shelby Gallagher, that's you. And this is about your books, A Great State. And this is where I get to be the interviewer and ask people questions about characters and how this all came about. Because I think people out there, even if they haven't read the books, and you should, by the way, they get a lot out of this. You're going to find out a lot about things that you didn't really think would be stuff you could learn by listening to an author talk about books. And that's what this is all about, is learning stuff and taking it away. So we talked a little bit in segment one about Julie, the main character, who is you.
Yes.
Single mom. Is there anything you'd like to add about Julie and what she's like?
Julie and what she's like, I would say, first of all, Julie is a very fictionalized version of me. And when I say, she's very much me up until when you're reading book one, until her marriage. And then really, she becomes very fictionalized to me. But the core of who she is, her personality, her constant thinking about things and how to problem solve is very much me. And she's me about 10 years ago in her confidence. I'm much more confident than she is. I'm very much more clear.
You're more confident now than she was,
right?
But you're very similar to book Julie as you are currently.
Correct. So yeah, so she's her personality is me, definitely.
What's it like writing about yourself? And there are two aspects to this. And this is so cool because I can relate because mm-hmm. you and I are in the same boat. There's always the question of, oh my goodness, the whole world's going to find out about my deepest,
right.
darkest thoughts and what I really think about other people. That's mm-hmm. that's a big one. And then the second part of it is the temptation to become a superhero. So tell me about those two things.
I would say it is terrifying in some ways, especially when you write something like book three that is just take your worst, darkest...
Chapter three
of book one. Your worst, darkest moment, most embarrassing, most shameful, most... and put it out there for public consumption. Think about that one thing in your life that when you... a memory. We all have them where you look back and go, oh, God, so embarrassed. It's... ugh. And you like quickly change your thoughts. Okay, put that on paper and put it out to be published. It's terrifying. So, but here's the thing. It happened. And I am very much a person of no secrets. Bad things happen when people keep dark, dark secrets. Hollywood makes a big deal about, you know, movies based on dark secrets. Will somebody find out, right? But my temptation to make a superhero, it's not really there because that it gets too fantastical that it gets unbelievable. And when it in this genre, if it gets too unbelievable, people shut down. And that's, I think, the challenge of dystopian stuff is you can really kind of get far out there, and I don't want to get too far out there that it's not believable. And I struggled with that with a few scenes. I'm not going to tell you what they were because I want people to read them and be believable. But when I'll say this last week, someone came to me and said, no, really, did you really do that? He was reading book two. And I said, no, I didn't. But I struggled. And I'm thinking to myself, that was one of those scenes I really struggled with. Was it too far out there? And he thought it was believable. So I was like, this is mission accomplished. I'm good.
And so anything to add about Julie?
Anything to add about Julie? No, I think I really wanted to make, I will say this, I wanted to make her, she's single mom, prepper. I wanted to introduce her and her demographic of people to the prepping movement. And we talked a lot about that in the beginnings of this whole endeavor. There's this whole...
You and I talked a lot about
this. You and I talked a lot about it. There's this whole demographic of women, single parents out there. And I've said it often, over 50% of children born in the United States right now are born to single parents, mostly women. And they are marketed to. They are snatched up. They are, especially in states, blue states, they are encouraged. They are handheld to become government dependent on SNAP and WIC and all of these low income sorts of programs for those families. And when a collapse happens, there will be a huge humanitarian sort of, it's not even sort of, there will be dire consequences from that. And then on the other hand, we have this great prepping movement that's really vibrant and robust, and these two worlds need to meet because the prepping world has a great gospel message to share with single moms that want help. And there's single moms out there that are like, I don't know how to do this. I want to know. Now, there's always those that don't. There's always people that don't want to prep, no matter where you're at. But there's prepping, there's that bootstrap, pull up your bootstrap kind of single mom out there that's like, I don't want this anymore. I want to be able to prep, and I want to be able to take care of my kids.
I remember, yes, by the way, I remember our first really long conversation. Mm-hmm. I was on the phone, I was traveling for business, and I had an hour and a half to kill in between meetings, and I'm in this town that, you know, I don't live in. And I called you, and we talked about exactly what you were mentioning, mm-hmm. about how women are marketed to, and they become dependent, and the government loves it when they're dependent, more votes, more money to spend, more of a crisis if the government isn't involved in everybody's life.
And they
life.
Think they can control that crisis too.
Exactly. And they might manufacture one, by the way. Mm-hmm. But that whole topic, and you kind of laid out for me, because I wasn't really knowledgeable about the single mom world. I just wasn't. I mean, I knew some single moms, but I had never had an in-depth conversation really about this. And when you laid out all the ramifications of women and children being dependent on the government for absolutely everything, that government slavery, help, whatever mm-hmm. you want to call it, being yanked out from under them. And then what do these women who can't take care of themselves and can't take care of their kids, and that's not, you know, a blame thing. That's like the system,
that's,
and that's how
that's
it's designed. That's
where we've landed, right.
Then who's going to fill the role? And pimps, gangs, other manipulative people, could be family members, all kinds of horrible things. And I remember that conversation very vividly. I remember exactly where I was, Vancouver, Washington. I remember the parking lot, mm-hmm. as a matter of fact. And I remember thinking to myself, this message needs to get out. And who can really articulate this? Shelby can, because she's lived it and she's seen this. And there are going to be tens of millions of single moms and their kids who are in this horrible predicament. This is a really big part of prepping. So you're that suburban guy out there listening. And let's say you've prepared for everything. You got your EMP plan, everything else. You know what you really need to think about, probably more than EMPs, is tens of millions of completely desperate, helpless women and children knocking on your door, knocking on your neighbor's door. And the thing you did that is just mind-blowing, I remember thinking, how has this not been talked about before? You brought up the point about people out there, your friends, your relatives, your sister, your niece, are going to be in this situation, maybe coming to your door. Why don't you tell people about that? Because this has been missing in prepping, and I'm so glad you brought it out.
Well, I think there's those of us who are like, you know what, I'm not a single mom. Maybe you're, I don't know, a prepper gentleman who's in your 60s. I don't have, that's not a world. Well, but we all have the nieces, the cousins, especially nieces. We have the daughters and the granddaughters who all live in the big cities. They've either gone to college and moved or whatever. We all know someone. I remember at the Inland Preparedness Expo last fall, I said this and like half the guys in the crowd started nodding their head. Yeah, we all know a niece that lives in Seattle, that lives in San Francisco, that lives. And the reason why they're there, one, they either went there for college and have a job there now, or they're there because that's where the services are. That's where you can get to your office, where you can get your government office to get those benefits and the those low-income sorts of jobs that kind of help them teeter along. What happens when a collapse happens? Uncle so-and-so, I need to get out. Can I come to your... They're going to call upon you. They're either going to be terrified, afraid, injured, and show up at your door. Or if you have a conversation with them now before a collapse happens, they're going to be terrified, but they're going to be prepped and strong when they come to your door.
And Julie does this. Tell folks about the idea of a single mom doing some preps mm-hmm. and showing up somewhere with stuff. Why does it matter to have the stuff more than just that you have something to eat? What is the other benefit to having some preps when you go somewhere else?
Well, as a single mom with vulnerable children, that means you can show up at a place with skills and preps to show that you know what you're doing, because if you can barter with that, hey, I've got some ammo, I've got some, I'm here and I'm showing up prepped, instead of I'm just showing up as me. What do I have to offer? Honestly, your body. And I've talked about that a lot. Human trafficking, sexual favors for food will become that's the only asset you have to barter away. And it could even result in your children as well. We know that happens already in a non-collapse situation. It will happen times 10 in a collapse.
Yeah, and for folks that haven't already heard it, please listen to episode 3 mm-hmm. of Prepping 2.0, which is all about how some men and some women will take advantage of each other in a collapse. And it is an amazing topic. Again, something that almost nobody talks about. I will say The Prepared Mind, which is a great YouTube channel, talked about it. And the Prepared Mind and us, I think, are it. So, beloved character, mm-hmm. Joel comes to mind.
Yes.
Is Joel really like you describe him in the books.
Yes. Joel, and even more so, I mean, I wish I could draw out and make it, there could almost be a whole nother book upon Joel. Joel is real. Joel knows he's a character in this book. And so he's come with us a few times to some book signings, and he loves signing his name in his book, in the books. And what's funny is that he hasn't read it. He's not a big reader. He's just like Joel in the books. He loves paracord, and he's a warrior. He loves firearms. He loves to go shooting and practice. I've had him shooting since he was about 8 or 9. Loves it. And I will say this, we talked about this quite a bit. He knows firearms almost better than I do, in the sense of, I remember one of the first times you met him, how just handling firearms came naturally to him. And that comes from, honestly, for a long time, he played the game Call of Duty. And I know that's controversial out there, but that is and it's a violent game, and I get that. But he learned firearms from that game. And I remember you have a cool story to tell about that.
Yeah, we're out there, and I hand him an AK, and I said, okay, here's how we go about this. And he was polite. He wasn't arrogant about it, but he knew how to run a safety. Mm-hmm. He knew how to change a mag. He knew how to chamber a round. He knew everything about it in the safety sense, not in the, you know, topical knowledge, like this is 7.62x30 died at this many feet per second. Nothing like that. I mean, he knew how to run it. I was really impressed, and he's a really good shooter. And I can attest, since I know him very, very well, mm-hmm. now I do, he is the Joel in the book. One of the things I love about Joel, so please talk about this, mm-hmm. is the idea of a young man, a teenager, a Gen Z. He's not even a millennial, right? He's like even younger. He's a yeah. Generation Z kid with all the stuff that Gen Z kids have, all the internet and all that other stuff. Coming of age.
Yeah.
In a collapse. What's that about? Because I think this will be another thing that people out there will have happening in their own families. They're going to have teenagers like this, young men really, coming of age in a collapse. Tell us about Joel, like the development of Joel, going from boy to man.
It is difficult. I have moments of fear, and I have moments of hope. And when I think about raising kids in the current generation, because where I have my moments of terrors, I'm like, what is it going to be like in 10 or 15 years when he is about 25 or 30 years old? That's terrifying to me, because I don't see things getting any better anytime soon in terms of getting ourselves back into the republic that our United States once was when I was his age. And even then it was dicey. I want for him opportunities to have the American dream that you and I had when we were kids. I get very terrified of that. I also get terrified when a collapse happens and suddenly we have gangs roaming around and we have, how can he protect himself? I'll tell you what, if a collapse happens and we have to start defending ourselves, you and I both know I can hand him a firearm and that kid can hold his own. I feel like, to raise him, I have developed, and I think I develop in him very gently, a prepared mind. When we have those power outages that we've had recently and things like that, where, okay, let's get the candles out, let's get the lights, you know, the solar lights out, let's play board games and things like that, he knows how to do it. And these are small little lessons. I've taught him how to use paracord. We do the firearms a lot. He has a knife. We take him fishing. These are all things that when the time comes that he needs to lean on these skills, he's got them.
And I think this is great for especially people in cities and suburbs, mm-hmm. where it's harder to be a self-reliant teenage boy, quite honestly. You got the school system, you know, doing
it's
bad
It's hard to
stuff.
Find a gun range, for Pete's sake.
It is. Yeah. And now, those of you who live out in the country, you're probably saying, well, yeah, I mean, all 12 and 13-year-olds know how to do all this stuff. And the answer is, no, they don't.
Nope.
Not nowadays. And I think Joel is a great model. First of all, it's all real, which is great, because real stuff is mm-hmm. more believable. It's better to read. I don't like the 12-year-old invented a jetpack and went around and flew around and dropped nuclear hand grenades on people and won the battle. I mean, that to me is just mm-hmm. dumb. I can't buy into that. So Joel, and by the way, folks love meeting him. You alluded to this. When we go to expos, and we're going to be at the Puget Sound Preparedness Expo, March 30th, Bremerton, Washington. Mm-hmm. And people love meeting him, and they can't believe it. He's like this real kid, and it's fun. You mentioned him signing autographs. What a cool thing for you to be able to do for him is to work really, really hard, write a bunch of books, and now, you know, a young teenager can have real self-esteem, like signing books, instead of fake self-esteem, like everyone got a D on this test, gold star for everybody, right? Real self-esteem.
Well, and if I can add this too, going back to what you just said, if you live in a rural world, rural community, yeah, this is normal, going shooting, hunting, fishing, camping. He grew up in his earlier years were in an urban environment where there are no ponds, you can't fire a firearm, you know, he can't play out front with his airsoft, you know what I mean? So, but here's the thing, if you live in a rural community and you send your kids off to college, you and I both know this, you can teach them these skills, you send them off to college, or send them off to a city for those opportunities, more times than not, I've talked to prepper parents, who are like, I just lost my kid. They just got sucked into that urban, no guns, no nothing, you know, no gardening, no nothing. Everything is at the grocery store. And it's so, there needs to be a balance there. I'm hoping I'm teaching my kid both worlds and how to exist in both worlds and still stay true to yourself.
Tell us about Ned.
Ned, when I first started writing the books, he was supposed to be just kind of this secondary character way over here. And he grew. And he's not based on anyone. I just had a friend of mine ask me last weekend at the book signing, said, I know who all your characters, he knows me really well. I know who all your characters are. I just don't know who Ned is. And I'm like, Ned is just kind of a character. So you know more about Ned than I do.
And why is that?
Well, because we would have, in the early stages of this book, we talk about this, our literary agent conversations is what we came to. I would bounce ideas off of you. How would a guy answer this dilemma? How would a guy respond here? And so you became the guy's point of view, because I can't do that. And so that's how Ned developed, is out of how would you respond? And so, yeah, that's kind of, you've become the voice of Ned. Very, very gradually.
Yeah, and I remember it started in the scene. I remember was Julie was, Julie was being very, she was attracted to Ned. She thought Ned was a really good man. And when I mean attracted, I mean like the real legitimate attraction, not just the physical stuff. She was noticing him, but she was so independent that she didn't want to sort of become vulnerable again and have and replace, you know, Steve, the ex-husband, with a new guy named Ned, and she's just as dependent. And in my opinion, the first drafts, Julie was overdoing the independence. And I remember thinking, this is weird to me. I don't know why Ned would continue to be interested in Julie, because this independence thing, I mean,
it's, you know, off-putting.
It's off-putting, and I get independence, but it was too much. And so I sort of gently said that to you, because obviously the extreme independence of Julie is your real life, and I didn't want to sort of criticize, you know, real life, Shelby. And so, and you took it very, very well, and we started working on this, and when you say Ned developed that way, that's how Ned developed. Mm-hmm. You would say, you know, how would a man, like a decent man like Ned is, react in this situation? And I was very flattered, quite honestly, that you look to me as a source of information on how a decent man would react to this. And I think it makes the story so much stronger, because you've got the Ned component to it. And I think it's interesting. He's sort of a combination of people, unlike most of the other folks who are real people. Well, speaking of real people, mm-hmm. Tell us about the dad character.
Floyd is a real person. And Floyd is he's my dad. And what's been really heartwarming through all of this, I did not tell Floyd I was writing these books. But you were with me. It was last spring, a little less than a year ago. I'm in the car with you. We're driving somewhere. And I'm having a conversation with the real Floyd. And it was the whole, Dad, I wrote these books. And they are a reflection of our lives, and it's going to be a reflection of our relationship. And I'm very close with him. We've had our differences over the years over petty little things, but he and I are very close. I'm getting teared up just talking about it. And it was a heartwarming call. You were listening. I said, here's the book. I wrote a book. I wrote some books, and you're a primary character in them. And I was afraid, in some small way, I was afraid that he would not like them, or not like how he was represented, not like where the story went. And I said, it's going to be very strange to you, Dad, I think, reading a reflection of yourself. So if you just be prepared. This is a fictionalized version of us. And he loved them. He loved them. And he went on a trip recently. I sent him a copy of book two when it first came out. And it's been really interesting.
Yes. And I've met him, spent a lot of time with him. Incredibly good man. Mm-hmm. And he's just like Floyd in the books. And that is scary, isn't it? When you put yourself out there, especially when your character is so realistically based. If I wrote, or you wrote, a character who was the person who is supposedly that character in real life would look mm-hmm. at it and go, yeah, well, I'm not like that. Well, then it's less of a big deal,
right?
Because it's not as real. But when you really describe somebody, and the person being described knows that you're really describing them, and it's all your thoughts, mm-hmm. especially with a really close relationship like father-daughter, it gets scary. And so he is just like in the book, and it was very heartwarming. I remember that phone conversation you had with him. And then, of course, you know, I met him, and we spent a lot of time together, and it was really, really neat for him to enjoy, is the word that's coming to mind, enjoy that close relationship on paper.
Yeah.
And for the rest of the world to see. Mm-hmm. I understand he's some of his neighbors. He's shown the book to them, and he's pretty proud. He's,
yes.
Yeah, this is my daughter, and she wrote about me. I mean, you know, you think it's a big deal to get a card, like on Father's Day, or for when kids do the little picture that they draw at school and they put on the refrigerator. That's all great. But when your child writes a lot about you and gets a book published, several books published, it's kind of a bigger deal than a greeting card. And
yeah.
that's been really, really fun to watch. Well, our last beloved character is Ash, and everyone's going to hear from her in episode 14. We talked about that, and that's really the best way to find out about Ash. This is kind of our list of beloved characters. In a minute, do you have something to add to that?
No, I don't. But I know you and I have a couple minutes to talk about something else.
Something else. Well, we are going to, in a minute or two, go for Patreon supporters.
Yeah.
patreon.com/prepping2.0. The after show is for them. And we're going to talk about the hated characters. We're going to talk about
the
sisters. Yes.
The sisters,
Mandy and Jody. They're fascinating. They're not just villains. We're going to talk about Steve. Everyone is interested mm-hmm. in Steve because he's very interesting to me. And the mayor and the governor. And then a character who's not hated but is interesting is Sean. And, of course, we're also going to talk very frankly about Chapter 3. So the after show is packed with really, really good stuff. The hated characters, Chapter 3. This has been amazing.
Mm-hmm.
We only have a few more seconds. Go ahead and say bye to the folks.
So we've talked about this. We want to close our shows out with a great quote to you. Failing to prepare is preparing to fail.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.